All right, so I forgot about the lab safety thing as well, though, which I need to give you. Actually, there's probably a few people in here who've never been in a lab class, right? Oh, where's my... Well, I'll complain about that later. Anyway, if you have had lab classes, it's the same thing we say in all of them. You have to know some basic safety rules, and most of it's common sense. You know, like not running around with scissors pointed at your eyes and things like that. But we're not working with things that can really do serious harm to you in this course. But we are working with some chemicals that you don't want to actually be in contact with. So we're usually going to be wearing gloves when we start the lab portion. Don't forget to do that. Even if I forget to tell you to put gloves on, you need to be using gloves whenever we're working with liquids of various sorts. Even if you know that it's harmless, you know, like colored water or something, you should be using gloves just to go through the motions. Another thing, though, which isn't really lab safety, is not safety from your viewpoint, is that you should never really, you should never assume that you're allowed to pour anything down a laboratory sink drain. In this class, actually, we will be able to do that quite often, but never assume it. Always ask me what we're allowed, how we're allowed to dispose of things. Often, I'll just have you keep things in place, which is ideal for you because you don't even have to mess with it in that case. But that even when you're allowed to leave stuff around, you still have to clean up, though, which means wiping off your countertop, putting in your chairs and whatnot before you leave. That way the folks who set up the lab, which is not me, will not get pissed off. Okay, if we have a fire alarm, obviously we go out. And there's only one exit here, so that's not too confusing. The important thing is that you guys have to leave first. I have to go down with the ship, in a sense. So when you go out there, wait on me. Don't just go home. I have to make sure everyone's still alive and get a head count. So we'll go away from the building and assemble somewhere out there, close by. That probably won't happen, but there could be a drill. Do we use any open flames? I think we do for at least one period. If we do use open flames, you know, with a lab burner, it is we're burning methane, natural gas, which doesn't burn very brightly. Sometimes it's really hard to tell that there's flame on, but it'll still burn your hair just as easily if it's long hair. So when you're leaning over, pay attention to that. Don't lean right over a burning or any sort of lab burner, whether it's on or not. Just always assume it's on when you're leaning over it. If you break something, you can't be afraid to let me know that you've broken it. Because for one thing, I need to replace it so that the other classes will not be short that item. But also, I need to make sure you haven't hurt yourself if you break something. You know, most things you're not going to break. You're not going to break expensive instruments, probably. But you might break a test tube or something like that. Just let me know so we can clean it up properly. Or if we spill something, let me know. Don't just clean it up on your own. Because of, you know, some things are maybe need special care in cleaning them up. Those are the basics. You know, it's not a long, drawn-out safety thing, but that's what you should be aware of. Okay, let's go to the slideshow now. And the slideshow we're looking at today is about biotechnology products. Biotechnology, obviously, is the main focus of this entire course. Does anyone know what biotechnology is? I mean, you've all heard of biotechnology, right? You've heard the word in the news, at least. There's biotech companies being talked about all the time. What would you say biotechnology is?
Like genetically modified organisms and stuff?
Yeah, genetically modified organisms is definitely part of biotechnology. But it's biotechnology includes a lot more than that as well. So that's too specific a definition for it to be all of biotechnology. Definitely that's included, though. How can you be more general in saying what biotechnology is? Yeah. Obviously, that's the using the word, its etymology. Bio, it means life, and technology is involved. Biotechnology sounds very modern. And the genetic engineering aspect of it, of course, is. We haven't been doing that very long in human history. But we've been doing biotechnology for thousands of years, actually. Because biotechnology, overall, just refers to using organisms, living organisms, to somehow produce a product. Now, that product can be something directly for sale to make a profit, but then products include more than just that. You know, like genetic engineering, the product is an organism itself that has certain traits that it wouldn't have naturally. So that's what I mean by product. We produce something basically, through biotechnology, we produce something basically that helps us somehow. We do biotechnology for ourselves. Humans do. Okay? Even though we alter organisms through biotechnology, we're doing that for our own good in the long run, somehow. And the reason that I've said we've been doing it for millennia is because we've been doing things like brewing beer or making other alcoholic beverages. We've also been making bread. We've been growing crops, you know. Growing, just farming itself is biotechnology. Because when you farm, you don't just sit there and wait for plants to grow and hope they're the right type of plants and wherever they grow is fine, right? You intervene. You, as the human, intervene with those organisms. You plant them all the same type in rows, things like that. That's manipulation. And therefore, farming is biotechnology, and that's ancient. But so is brewing, and that's what I have here on this first slide. Brewing is biotechnology because we use a certain organism. What organism do we use in brewing? Yeah, we use yeast. Brewer's yeast. That's why it's called brewer's yeast. And yeast does what? Anyone know? Yeah, it undergoes fermentation. But what does fermentation do? Yes, fermentation takes sugar, and actually it's something called glycolysis that breaks the sugar down, and we'll talk about that later. But sugar is fuel for cells. All of your own cells use sugar as fuel. Well, you get energy out of fuels by breaking those fuel molecules apart. And so yeast cells do this for their own energy reasons. To keep them alive, they break down glucose. But in the process, they need to undergo, besides glycolysis, this parallel process happening at the same time called fermentation that, for reasons that I don't want to get into yet, but we'll talk about, they undergo this fermentation so that they can continue glycolysis. That's what fermentation is for. It allows the cell to continue to break down new sugars. But in that process, yeah, you're right, that produces carbon dioxide. At least the kind of fermentation that yeast undergoes does. Produces CO2, and it also produces alcohol. Where did the alcohol come from? The alcohol comes from the fuel. So when that sugar molecule is broken down, that glucose, which is a sugar, type of sugar, when that's broken down by the yeast cells, it's made into another compound that then is converted in the process of fermentation into alcohol. So alcohol is made up of the same building blocks as the sugar itself is, carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. It's just arranged differently. And there's different kinds of fermentation. Our own cells undergo fermentation as well when we don't have oxygen available. But we don't make alcohol. We make lactic acid. Otherwise, we'd be able to get drunk just by holding our breath. We can't do that, though. Well, speaking of getting drunk, though, we exploit yeast. That's what makes it biotechnology. We exploit yeast, let them do what they naturally do, break down sugars into alcohol and release carbon dioxide at the same time. But we allow them to do that so that they make a product for us, which is beer. And that's why beer is carbonated, because the carbon dioxide that's naturally released by the process of fermentation is part of the beer then. And the alcohol is in there, which is also came... The carbon dioxide and the alcohol both come from the glucose, the sugar that the yeast is breaking down. And you can use all kinds of different things to make beer. In other words, you can ferment a lot of different plant types. They all contain sugars, so they're all available for fermentation. By the way, those glasses on the bottom is just serving as a bar graph, showing you which countries, showing they're ordered by consumption rates. So it looks like Czech Republic consumes the most beer per capita in the world at the moment. Slide 2 shows you the life cycle of brewer's yeast. I don't want you to memorize these details, but yeast itself is a small organism. We're very huge organisms. But yeah, there are some things that are bigger than we are, whales and sequoia trees and things like that, grizzly bears. But we are bigger as humans than most organisms on Earth. Especially since most organisms on Earth, when you consider each individual organism separately, are actually unicellular. They're made up of just one cell. And that includes yeast. Yeast, even though they are one cell and therefore kind of simple from our point of view, they still have a pretty elaborate life cycle. And they do a lot of stuff that our own cells do. And they are sexual organisms just like we are, even though they don't have to reproduce by sexual means, they do just like we do. And that's what that life cycle is showing you. But the main reason I put it up there is just to show you the name, the scientific name, which is Saccharomyces cerevisiae. That name is a two-part name, really. What are the two parts to a scientific name? In other words, Saccharomyces is what kind of thing? Anyone know? Well, what I mean is, it's good that you're doing this etymologically and you recognize that saccharo means sugar. But what I mean is, Saccharomyces is the genus, Cerevisiae is the species. So if you've heard of genus and species before, it's a way of classifying organisms. A genus is a group of related organisms that's bigger than a species. A species is also a group of related organisms, but it's more specific. Okay? Well, when you refer to an organism by its genus and species, you should always italicize both of those names, which is why that's in italics. And the genus name should always be capitalized, but the species name should never be capitalized. And that's why it appears that way. Saccharomyces is the genus, Cerevisiae is the species. So what do those words mean? Saccharo, like you said, means sugar. The myces part means fungus, which is what yeast is an example of. What about Cerevisiae? Yeah.
Is part of it like the founder of that?
It is, and often, yeah, for a lot of these scientific names, part of the name will be named after who discovered it. That's correct. But not in this case. What does Cerevisiae sound like? What Spanish word? Cervezas, yes. Which are what? Beer, right? So it's well named. It's the same yeast, though, that's used not just to make beer. It's also used to make any alcoholic beverage. So there's three major classes of alcoholic beverages, right? You have beer, wine, and spirits, or liquor. All three of them have exactly the same kind of alcohol in them. Now, there's all kinds of different alcohols in science. Something that is classified as an alcohol has to just have a certain characteristic that I'm not going to get into. There's many examples of that, though. But there's only one kind that we should be drinking, and that's ethanol. That's beverage alcohol. Well, that's exactly the same chemical that's in all three of these classes of alcoholic beverages. So in other words, you don't want to be drinking methanol or isopropyl alcohol, rubbing alcohol, or anything other than ethanol. And you might not even drink ethanol. I mean, it's not required, obviously. But wine and liquor. The only reason I put Tanqueray so big is because that's what I drink. All right, slide 5 shows you a schematic of the process used in making liquor. Now, the big difference between liquor or spirits and the other kinds of alcoholic beverages is the strength of that liquid, right? It has a lot more alcohol in it than beer or wine does. Any liquor does. And the reason it has so much more alcohol in it is not that the yeast that are used to produce that alcohol make a lot more alcohol. You know, the process really starts the same, whether you're making beer, wine, or liquor. It's just that liquor becomes strong because it undergoes another process after the alcohol is made. And that second process is called distillation. To distill something means that it undergoes a certain type of separation process. Distillation is one of several different scientific separation processes. And you can separate things, you know, if you have a mixture of stuff, it's often useful for you to separate the components of that mixture for whatever reason, because you want to use one of those things, which in this example holds true. Well, you can separate them different ways. Distillation is one way in which to separate them. The separation that occurs during distillation is separation based on the fact that your mixture contains things that have different boiling points. So distillation is used to separate components of a liquid mixture called a solution. That's why solution is labeled at the bottom there. The stuff that you put into the still, which is what you call something that undergoes, that the apparatus that you use is called a still. All right? And a solution is what, scientifically? I'm not talking about solution meaning the answer to something. What is a scientific solution? Anyone know? It is a type of mixture. Yeah, there are other mixtures that aren't solutions. But a solution is a mixture that contains two major components. One is a solvent, at least one type of solvent. And The solvent part of a solution is the thing that is doing the dissolving. So a solution is something in which something is dissolved in something else. All right? The thing that's actually doing the dissolving is called the solvent. And the things that are dissolved in that solution are called solutes. So the combination of the two, solvent and solutes, is the solution. So when you allow the yeast to do their bit of fermentation, you have more than just alcohol in that mix. It's a solution. You're interested in getting just the alcohol out, though, or mostly just alcohol. And so you take advantage of the fact that the alcohol, which is just one component in that mixture, that alcohol boils at a certain temperature that's different from the temperature at which the other parts of that mixture boil. But what does it mean to boil? What's happening during boiling?
You're changing from a liquid state to a gas state.
That's exactly right, yeah. Boiling is evaporation. And evaporation is the change from a liquid state to a gaseous state. Matter can exist in different states. Solid, liquid, gas, and plasma, but we're not going to get into plasma. All right, but solid, liquid, and gas we're all familiar with, because water itself, for instance, most important chemical to life, exists in all three of those states, right? Ice is frozen, that's a solid. Liquid water, it's what most of us are made up of. But it can also evaporate into steam, right? Or humidity in the air. Well, that's true for other things besides water, including the alcohol that's in this mixture. Alcohol happens to be pretty volatile, which means it has a fairly low boiling point, meaning that it evaporates at a pretty low temperature compared to other things, which is why, you know, that's why perfume is alcohol-based. You put perfume on your skin, and it's not wet very long, because that alcohol evaporates off quickly and leaves behind just the particles that make it smell the way it does. Right? Well, that's true in this mixture. This mixture of stuff you're trying to make into some sort of booze has alcohol and other stuff. The alcohol is the stuff that has the lowest boiling point. So if you heat up the entire mixture, the first stuff to go from liquid to gas, the first stuff to evaporate, is going to be the alcohol. And you don't get it hot enough for the other stuff to evaporate, so it stays behind. So this vapor column right here, that is gaseous alcohol at this point. Evaporation has taken place, and you then allow this gas to go through usually like a coil or something, but it's some tube that is cooled somehow. So you have a coil so that so it's nice and long, but it's still compact. It gives the gas a lot of opportunity to contact the cold walls of that tube. The reason that you want this thing cool is because you want to undo the evaporation that you just caused. Okay, so you cause the evaporation to get the alcohol away from the rest of the components. But you don't want to bottle the alcohol in gas form, right? You want to bottle it in the liquid form. So you cool it back down, and that forces it to condense. Condensation is the opposite of evaporation. In other words, if you get this gas cool, it goes from being a gas back to being a liquid. And that's what the dew point is all about. You know, when you hear what the dew point is for the day, that is the temperature that you would have to cool the air down to in order for the humidity, the gas, the water vapor that's in the air would go back to liquid. And that's why it's called the dew point. When that happens, you see water form on leaves and stuff. It's liquid water. The same thing's happening here with this alcohol. And what comes out, which is called the distillate, because it has been distilled, is now separated from the rest. And therefore, this is kind of close to being pure alcohol. Now, it's not 100% alcohol because some things actually do get evaporated along with the alcohol. But it's a hell of a lot stronger than it was when you started out. Okay? And you could double distill it. You could take what you've already distilled once, put it into another still, and separate it even further. Every time you get closer and closer to pure alcohol. All right, so that's how liquor's made. And I can't say try this at home because I don't think you're allowed to do that. But it's not like liquor's hard to obtain anyway. All right, slide 6. This is a slide that explains fermentation, which is what's behind making this alcohol. And this really is the step in which it is biotechnology. The distillation step, that really isn't biotechnology because you're no longer using any organisms at that point. The yeast have already done their job. All distillation does is make it stronger in alcohol. All right? But to get the alcohol to begin with, you have to undergo fermentation. So this is what the yeast is doing. This is alcohol fermentation. This only arrow, labeled glycolysis, that is actually a complicated process in itself. That's an example of what is called a biochemical pathway. A biochemical pathway is a series of chemical reactions, one after another. Okay? And so there's 10 steps to this that we're not going to get into the details of. But glycolysis is a pathway whose function is to use glucose, which is the fuel, that's the sugar. Things that end in OSE are sugars. Glucose is just one of many sugars. What we call sugar informally, just in colloquial speech, table sugar, is sucrose. But notice that also ends in OSE. Glucose, though, is the master fuel of cells. And glycolysis takes glucose, this sugar, as an input, and processes it by breaking it down to get energy out of it. That energy, part of that energy, is stored in a molecule of ATP, which is what our cells use to power other things that are going on in the cell that require energy. Well, that energy comes from the glucose, but we don't use it directly to do the expensive things that cells do. Instead, we extract that energy and make these molecules of ATP to store that energy. In the process, though, what you do is break down a glucose that has 6 carbon atoms in it into 2 pyruvate molecules. And notice that the formula is shown above, the structural formula, and there are only 3 carbons, 3 C's, in pyruvate. So you break down this a single glucose molecule that has 6 carbons in it into 2 pieces, each of which has 3 carbons. That's how you get the energy out of your fuel. That's why the cell is undergoing glycolysis, just like all of your cells are undergoing glycolysis right now, to get energy for the purpose of powering all the activities that a cell needs to do to stay alive. So that's why the yeast is doing this. This fermentation bit is not really done for its own sake. The problem here with glycolysis is that as you run this, the only way you can make these ATPs is if you have these molecules called NAD plus available. If you don't have those available, glucose will come to a halt. Okay? Notice that what's happening here is that NAD plus is getting converted into something that's called NADH. It has an extra hydrogen, which is what this H is. That came from the glucose. So unless this NAD plus is available, glycolysis cannot continue. And if glycolysis can't continue, the yeast will not have any energy, and it will die very quickly. So this fermentation, which is the bottom part of this figure, is a way to convert this NADH thing back into NAD+, so that it can go to glycolysis and allow glycolysis to continue to happen. All right? In that process, though, of stripping the NADH of its H to put it back into NAD+, that converts pyruvate into an intermediate called acetaldehyde, and I want you to memorize that name. Pyruvate gets converted into this, though, and then into alcohol. And when you look at the carbons, notice that this intermediate only has two carbons now. A carbon and two oxygens have been stripped of the pyruvate, from the pyruvate. Well, a carbon and two oxygens is CO2, or carbon dioxide. So that's where the bubbles in beer come from. The yeast strips a carbon and two oxygens out of what's left of the fuel in order to allow this process to continue. But the end product is ethanol. Okay? Whether you're making beer, wine, or liquor. All the same organism being used. Now this slide 7 shows you a different kind of fermentation. There are different kinds of fermentation that are that different species, different kinds of organisms use. Whatever kind of fermentation you're talking about, though, it always does the same thing, which is it allows you to get back to this NAD+ so that glycolysis can continue. It's just what you do with that pyruvate. What the hell's going on here? All right. Well, let me just say this in words then, while this is back starting up. I wonder whether it was scheduled to shut down. No, it should have given me an... Anyway, the other slide that has fermentation on it does the same thing, but that's a kind of fermentation that's happening in our own cells. And it was called lactic acid fermentation. Because instead of making alcohol, our cells make lactic acid, which is similar, but definitely different. Now, our own cells are doing exactly the same thing as the yeast cells to begin with. Our cells are undergoing glycolysis all the time. You know, that glucose that is the sugar that glycolysis breaks down, that's blood sugar. Glucose is blood sugar. So when we talk about our blood sugar level, it's how much glucose is traveling in our blood being delivered to the cells of the body. That comes from the food we eat, right? So our own cells are breaking that down for the purpose of producing these energetic ATP molecules. And for the same reason that the yeast undergoes fermentation, we do that so that we can get back to NAD+ and allow us to keep using more sugar to make more energy. But in that process, our cells don't strip off a carbon and two oxygens, so we don't produce any CO2 in the process, which is a good thing for us because that would make our blood more acidic and would have the same effect that holding your breath does. Holding your breath keeps the CO2 that you're supposed to be breathing off in your blood, and your body won't allow you to continue that very long. It'll force you to breathe eventually, and that's because the more CO2 you have in your blood, the more acidic it is. So that's why we don't do that. But in the process, in the end result, we don't make ethanol or alcohol for beverages. We make lactic acid, which is bad for us. Lactic acid is toxic in high concentrations. But we have no choice. If we don't undergo the lactic acid fermentation, we can't continue glycolysis. So, lactic acid builds up, and that's part of fatigue. What I mean by this is that this whole fermentation process is an example of an anaerobic process. What does anaerobic mean? Yeah, without oxygen. Aerobic means with oxygen. Anaerobic means not without oxygen, so it means in the absence of oxygen. Most of the time we have oxygen available, right? We can't live very long without oxygen. But if we sprint, for instance, then there's no way that our heart is going to be able to pump enough blood fast enough, or our lungs to work fast enough to deliver oxygen fast enough to the cells for us to avoid anaerobic conditions. That's if we're sprinting. Notice that you cannot sprint indefinitely. Just like you can't hold your breath indefinitely, you can't sprint indefinitely. Your body will force you to shut down, right? But before you absolutely shut down, your cells, robbed of oxygen, will switch from processing that glucose more efficiently with oxygen to switching to this anaerobic mode, which is fermentation. That allows you still to get some energy out of your glucose, just not as much as you would otherwise. Keeps you alive, though. And in the process, lactic acid builds up. And that's part of fatigue. We can't let that lactic acid get too high, because that causes problems then. So we have to quit exercising and then allow that lactic acid to be dealt with, turned into stuff that's not toxic, which takes a little bit of time, by the way. And that's why, you know, if you do sprint, obviously you're huffing and puffing while you're sprinting, breathing maximally, as fast as your body will allow. But when you stop, when your body shuts down and you stop, you don't just sit down and start breathing calmly like you were before you started sprinting, right? You're out of breath for quite a while. And that's because it takes a while to deal with all this lactic acid that's built up. But the process is the same thing that the brewer's yeast is doing. It's doing it for the same reason, to allow glycolysis to continue. Now, slide 8 shows you another use of this fermentation process, and that's in bread making. Another biotechnology product. So this is another example of biotechnology that's been happening for centuries, millennia, really, thousands of years. The purpose in bread making, though, is not really for the alcohol, right? It does produce alcohol, though, because the yeast doesn't care whether you're making booze or bread. It's just eating, basically. It's using that sugar for energy. But it still does produce the carbon dioxide and the alcohol. Now, why is that good for baking? Exactly. Those carbon dioxide bubbles that form in the dough cause it to expand. So that's the rising of dough. You know, you give it a little time to work. As those yeast eat more and more of the sugar that's in the dough mixture, CO2 bubbles will cause the whole volume of that dough to increase. Actually, it'll double, right? And you know that they're just bubbles of CO2 in there, because if you punch it down then, you basically make that dough smaller again, because you get rid of that gas that's built up. But there's alcohol in there as well. Why don't you get drunk when you eat the bread? Exactly. You put the dough in the oven, and I've already told you that alcohol is volatile. It doesn't take a very high temperature for it to boil away. So by the time that you make the bread, there's no more alcohol left. Still the same organism, though, and therefore it is a biotechnology product. I definitely have to get a remote going in here. And some cheeses rely on the same thing. That's just one example of why cheese is an example of a biotechnology product, but also certain cheeses rely on... it's a biotechnology product because you rely on the milk to begin with of some sort. So you choose some sort of mammal to produce the milk for you, goat, cow, whatever. It's a biotechnology product for that reason alone, but then you also exploit the biology of several microorganisms, including, molds, different fungi. You know, what makes blue cheese blue, for instance, is a fungus. You're allowing that to grow in a controlled manner. Therefore, you're controlling an organism. Therefore, it's biotechnology. And it looks like I made it through the slideshow. So that's it for the first day. Just show up promptly on Wednesday, armed with the knowledge for that quiz. Yeah. No. I do expect, I'm glad you said that though, because two more things. I'm glad you said that because I do expect you to read the entire syllabus. Don't just rely on what I've gone over. Read every word of it carefully, because that can get you into trouble as well, grade-wise, if you don't. And the last thing is another thing I forgot about on the safety thing. I noticed that several of you have drinks sitting out. That and shoes are the big things that the sticklers care about. So I can never allow you to have your drinks out. Now, if you do bring drinks in, if you stow them in the shelf, we can keep them over there, but you can't drink at your stations. Okay? If you need to, you can go over there and drink, but keep them there. All right, that's it.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.